Welcome to Sentient Developments Radio. My name is George Dvorsky, and you are listening to the audio cast of my blog, Sentient Developments, Transhumanist Perspectives on Science, Philosophy, Ethics, and the Future of Intelligent Life. Topics discussed on Sentient Developments Radio include transhumanism,
bioethics,
human enhancement,
the singularity,
accelerating change,
technology,
neuroscience,
cosmology,
catastrophic risk,
existentialism,
spirituality,
philosophy,
science. So sit back, relax, and open your mind to Sentient Developments Radio. Welcome once again to Sentient Developments Radio. My name is George Dvorsky, podcasting to you today on Monday, April the 17th, 2006. I've got a very special show lined up for you today. I recently interviewed Dr. James Hughes, and the next two podcasts will be devoted to that interview. Today will be part one, and in a few days I will issue part two of this interview. Dr. James Hughes is the Executive Director for the Institute for Ethics and Emerging Technologies and the World Transhumanist Association. He's a bioethicist and sociologist at Trinity College in Hartford, Connecticut, where he teaches health policy. He holds a doctorate in sociology from the University of Chicago, where he's also taught bioethics. Dr. Hughes is author of Citizen Cyborg, Why Democratic Societies Must Respond to the Redesigned Human of the Future, and he also produces a syndicated weekly radio program called Change Surfer Radio. Dr. Hughes will be speaking along with myself at the Institute for Ethics and Emerging Technologies Conference in Stanford in late May, from May the 26th through the 28th. In part one of my interview with Dr. Hughes, we talked about his ongoing projects, his work with the WTA and the IEET, and just exactly where he's hoping to see those two organizations go forward in the near future, and what are some of his near-term and long-term goals. And in addition, we talk about some global issues that are currently facing tech progressives. And then part two, we discuss world federalism. We discuss potential ways to contain the spread of apocalyptic weapons and other dangerous threats. We discuss the militarization of space and potential problems that are brought out through the patenting of genetic information, more specifically human genetic information. So without further ado, here is part one of my interview with James Hughes. This was recorded on Saturday, April the 15th, 2006. And again, look for part two to be published in a couple of days.
Dr. J, I wanted to know what transhumanist and tech progressive projects do you currently have that are on the go?
Well, the big thing that I'm trying to find the time and attention to devote to is that we need to revamp the priorities of the WTA and the Institute for Ethics and Emerging Technologies. There's a general consensus out there that it's time to take our various movements, in a much more activist direction and to start focusing on what we can actually do, that we've done enough period of talk. And so I'm defining a number of campaigns that I'm going to be proposing to the board and to the membership as ideas for the direction that we should go. And among those, the top priority, I think, and the most consensual priority, is the notion of an international funding program for anti-aging research and medicine. And that really was driven home to me when Jay Olshansky did his big turnaround in The Scientist recently. He had been such a critic of anti-aging medicine, a critic of Aubrey's work. And then he and a bunch of other of those critics suddenly said, well, you know what, it wouldn't be such a bad idea if we could get governments to spend about $3 billion on anti-aging therapy, because it would save the longevity dividend. You know, it would save a bunch of money if we could keep seniors from getting disabled. And I think there's such a pressing anxiety in public policy circles now in Europe and the United States about this coming avalanche of baby boomer senescence. And if we can propose some kind of tech progressive solution to how to deal with that, I think we have a wonderful opportunity and opening.
Right. So what is it then that, in your mind, that the WTA has really not been focusing on that you would like to see them? You mentioned activism. Do you want to elaborate on what you mean by that?
Well, I think that the WTA as a nonprofit organization has certain constraints in terms of how engaged it can get. It can't engage in partisan activity, although people involved in the WTA have increasingly turned to various kinds of partisan engagements. Most recently, a member of our board was considered as a nominee for candidacy for the Italian parliament. And the party that he is a part of, Rosa del Pugno, is the Rose in the Fist, has a transhumanist caucus within it, but of course not formally affiliated with the WTA, since that would violate our nonpartisan status. But Rosa del Pugno is a very promising sign because in the context of Italian politics, it has been a liberal and yet progressive voice. Its predecessor was the Radical Party of Italy. And it had had what most people considered a very eclectic set of issues, support for gay rights, support for abortion rights, support for euthanasia, or the right to assisted suicide, as we would say here in the West. But then with the stem cell issue and the kind of polarization that happened around science and with the church, and now just yesterday, the Pope issued a broad speech against human genetic modification. There's been a very deep polarization now within the political scene in Italy between secularists who support science and those who are on the generally on the right who are critical of it. And that's been a very positive sign for the kind of politics that you and I would like to see, because so many progressives have been critical of science for one reason or another.
Actually, it's interesting that you bring up the Pope's statement from yesterday. I actually wanted to speak to you specifically about that. For those who might have missed it, yesterday being Good Friday, he took a direct aim at genetic research, and he called it an attempt to modify the very grammar of life as planned and willed by God. He warned followers that to take God's place would be insanely arrogant, risky, and a dangerous venture. And he actually said that humanity is in the grip of Satan, and these are really kind of old world kind of terminologies to be using, but for an institution and for a group that claimed to have a significant role in the demise of atheistic communism, just how seriously do you take the Catholic threat, or I really shouldn't maybe use the word threat, but the Catholic influence in terms of just the normalizing of enhancement issues and the broader issues of procreative liberties?
Well, the Catholic Church is not terribly influential in Europe because Europe is so much more secular. But, among the various forces that are influential in Europe, it is one of the more influential. It's, it's old, and people who are very loyal to it, it's much more influential in the developing world and in global politics. A lot of the Vatican has a lot of influence at the UN level. And it has alliances around a lot of these issues with the Christian right in the United States, which is very influential in American politics, as you know, and many people are know. So I see this as part of a phenomena that, as was pointed to by political scientists as early as the 1970s, which is kind of Abraham Maslow's hierarchy of needs based idea that, once people get past a certain level of material contentment, issues of values become much more central in their politics. Now, obviously labor and employment and global security and these other issues are still on the table. But what we see in American politics is that the principal predictor of people's voting behavior over the last two presidential elections have been how secular they were. And as a consequence of the increasing power of the Christian right within American churches and now within the Catholic Church, you have very little space for religious liberals, and those religious liberals are beginning to discover they have a lot more in common with seculars than they did in the past, and this is having a powerful influence in the realignment of politics so that progressive voices are increasingly associated both, by the enemy and by progressives with secularism. So that for us secular types, that's a pretty positive phenomenon, and for transhumanism, it's a positive phenomenon because we are, for better or worse, largely a secular movement, and our values are far more simpatico with people who have secular commitments. I still think we need to work on finding our religious allies and having them at the table, but So in other words, I don't see it as a negative phenomenon that the Pope is taking this hard right turn and is focusing his guns on transhumanism. Quite explicitly, the Vatican newspaper has attacked transhumanism by name a number of times in the last year and has been very upset about the growth of the Italian Transhumanist Association. So,
In thinking about the Italian model, then remarkable successes that they've had there. What could we here in Canada and the United States learn from that model, and in particular in the United States, because you don't have the kind of parliamentary democracy that they do in Italy, where you have a myriad of parties that are represented. What do you see as being, a good model to move forward on?
Well, the political engagement of transhumanists has to be very different depending on the different countries. A winner-take-all system like the U.S. or like Canada is very different, as you say, from a parliamentary system like Israel or a proportional representation system like Israel or Italy, where you can have a much more limited focused party get into the parliament. And in Israel, in the recent election, they had the Senior Citizens Party, whose sole campaign platform was defending senior pensions. They got elected to the Knesset. But in the United States, the model that I think we need to pursue is the think tank model, which is that you need to have a base for policy-oriented public intellectuals who write extensively. And, of course, you are one of those. You're not a U.S. One, but you're part of this general world of public intellectuals from the transhumanist progressive side who write frequently about issues of public concern and write quite engagingly. Your cultural criticism is quite engaging writing as well. So we need lots of those kinds of folks, because we need people to start articulating public policy views from this side of the fence that are accessible to the public. Then we need to kick it up a notch and start writing books about that kind of stuff. We need to hold conferences. We need to begin to identify politicians and potential organizational allies around specific campaigns. The stem cell stuff was kind of an early taste of that, but for our issues, most of the potential allies that are out there don't yet have an interest and wouldn't yet be interested in finding us as allies for their cause, because we would bring more baggage to the table than necessary.
Right.
We don't have enough troops or funds that it makes it worthwhile to associate transhumanism with a battle over embryonic stem cells. But there are some issues that we're basically the only ones who are willing to defend. And, for instance, human-animal hybrids, when President Bush attacked them in the State of the Union message, there were lots of people who got on board and said, oh, yeah, the Christian right was all over that. It was basically a bone to throw to the Christian right.
Right.
But there weren't very many forces on any side of the fence who are willing to come out and say, hey, Christian, human-animal hybrids, important research.
Yes.
There's a lot of good reasons to be doing this kind of research.
Right.
And we are one of the few kind of voices that would do that.
Now, you did mention earlier that you're kind of reimagining some of the WTA's priorities over the next little while. How do you see the Institute for Ethics and Emerging Technologies continuing to work with the WTA, and how do you see what do you see the future of the IEET specifically?
Well, the IEET is both organizationally and increasingly philosophically distinct from the WTA, even though that we have now still the same executive director and we share a lot of the same leadership and a lot of the fellows come out of the WTA. But about half of the WTA's fellows are people who don't consider themselves transhumanists. And we consciously created the IEET to draw those people in, to have a space where the friends of transhumanism, or the people who are interested in transhumanism but didn't consider themselves transhumanists, could begin to work with the rest of us around a common intellectual program. And the organizational model is as a think tank as opposed to a social movement organization. So that's become, eventually we will have to make very clear that these are two very distinct things. One of the directions that the IEET is going is that I think many of us are increasingly convinced that there is a legitimate, independent identity for techno-progressive thought as opposed to transhumanism. That techno-progressivism is not simply the left wing of, you know, it's not simply democratic transhumanism, as I referred to it in my book, Citizen Cyborg. It's not simply the left wing of transhumanism. It encompasses issues which don't fit within the transhumanist bailiwick of human enhancement technologies and so forth. So, for instance, the basic income guarantee as a public policy for guaranteeing human security in an age of rapid automation and globalization is not something that I don't expect very many transhumanists are going to see as core to our movement, but right. It is core now to the way that the techno-progressives are framing themselves. So I think that the IET can increasingly play a role as a techno-progressive institution, which has one foot in transhumanism and one foot outside of transhumanism in a variety of progressive engagements, feminist bioethics through Linda McDonald and so on. So of course, Riccardo Campa from Italy is one of the fellows of the IET as well. So in an explicitly socialist, Rosa Nel Pugno version of socialism out there.
Now, I mean, this perhaps might be, a selectional effect happening to me right now, but I seem to think that looking at the news and global events, that we're in a real kind of a pivotal point, a real stressful time right now. And I think, for example, the pending flu pandemic, we've got global warming problems, superstorms, and, of course, recently the proliferation of or the potential proliferation of nuclear weapons to less than responsible regimes. And I'm thinking, of course, of Iran and Korea. And then we have rise of corporatist biotechnology, the patenting of the human genome, and ongoing privacy concerns, and even a withering away of human rights. Jay, are things really this bad today, or are we just too close to it? What's your take on, I guess, modern times?
Well, I have to confess, I've always had an apocalyptic part of my personality. For many apocalyptics, it's because you would like to see the world change a lot faster. And if we got whacked by an asteroid, or if Satan returned, then things would change very fast.
Well, there's the old revolutionist credo: the worse, the better.
Exactly, and we have to, you know, consciously identify that and hold that at bay, that tendency of mind. But yes, the world is in a hell of a situation, and from our framework of seeing the various emerging technologies that will be coming online and seeing the various possibilities of things that might happen in the future, things could get worse a lot fast, very fast. So one of the campaigns that I'm proposing both for the WTA and for the IET that I'm trying to frame as a way to get us to start thinking about the myriad of concerns that Nick Bostrom identified as existential threats, threats to the existence, the future existence of the human race, and things that are a little bit more approximate and less existential, like climate change, is what I'm calling the campaign for global security. And we need to have a debate about whether security is the right word for this, but the reason I like that is that it touches on both the concerns that people have about emerging weapons of mass destruction, how to create global transnational authority that can effectively create security in a world where we have these proliferation of technologies, as well as the security that we need to have ecologically, the kinds of policies that we need to adopt immediately to prepare for and remediate the damage that we've done to the ecosystem. Emerging infectious diseases, it's just a myriad of threats to humanity that we need to start thinking about in a systematic way. And Nick's been doing that for some time, and it's connecting that to the overall transhumanist goal, which is not just to be gung-ho about technology, but to say, we want to be here on this planet for hundreds of thousands of years. We want somebody to be on this planet, and we want the human race to survive the next 100 years. And what are the threats that might get in the way of that, and what can we do about them as a movement? And hopefully some of them will be addressable through emerging technologies, and maybe some of them won't be, and maybe they'll only be addressable through political or economic agencies. So we need to figure out what the policy framework is for all of that.
And sorry, did you say this will be an initiative that will be put forth by the WTA or the IET? What were your thoughts?
Well, again, articulating, this is kind of part of the multi-level chess that I'm currently in the middle of, but because I'm director of both IET and WTA at this point. But for the WTA, there are a different set of issues which will have external and internal validity as potential campaigns. And so I'm framing all of them as campaigns and then trying to identify who the potential allies would be and the potential framing of those issues as transhumanist issues. For the IET, it's a matter of framing it as a techno-progressive set of issues right. with a different set of languages and a different set of potential allies and much more of an intellectual and policy-related set of challenges as opposed to kind of on-the-ground activist challenges. So, all of that is slowly cooking its way towards some kind of proposal for everybody concerned, and hopefully we'll have a nice big conversation about it over the next couple of months.
Sure.
Another one of the areas that I see, so that's in terms of the two external ones, clearly this global security set of issues, which encompasses emerging technologies of mass destruction, emerging infectious diseases, climate change, global health, which was one of the priorities of both the WTA and IET. Putting all that together as something that, a set of issues that we're concerned about and trying to figure out how we're going to address those. In terms of our immediate domestic policy concerns, the campaign for anti-aging medicine, and then there's the kind of core transhumanist issue, which is issues that aren't really being talked about by very many people, but are things which are a core intervention that we need to make. And those I see as issues around the redefinition of human rights. And as you know, I've been talking for some time about the need to both deepen human rights, to make clear that bodily autonomy, reproductive rights, and cognitive liberty should be the starting points for public policy around questions of genetic modification and drug policy and so forth, as well as broadening human rights to be transhuman in the sense that we should stop talking in human racist terms about the human genome being the basis of our common humanity,
right.
and instead start talking about personhood and compassion and these other values that we find shared with great apes and potentially with post-humans. So I think that's a huge challenge, and I don't see anybody else in the policy domain talking about those challenges.
That concludes part one of my interview with Dr. James Hughes. Part two, we will talk about world federalism, the containment of apocalyptic and other dangerous threats. We'll talk about the militarization of space and the patenting of genetic information. Look for part two of this interview to be published shortly on Sentient Developments Radio. Until then, everyone, have a great week. Bye-bye.